Something I see in people so often is this struggle that their life has no meaning. They have no real purpose or don't mean anything to the world. And yet God says so much about how highly He values us, how He has created each of us special for a unique mission and purpose. It's actually really incredible. My name is Whitney Pelahowski, and I'm part of the Revolution family, where we know that you matter because God says you matter.
Well, good morning. Welcome to Revolution. I just want to thank you guys. That's my wife speaking on there, and you know, we've been here about 4 weeks, so if this is your first time here, welcome. We've only been here for a little while. If this is your first time back, welcome again. But I want to thank you guys for welcoming us in these 4 weeks. We still don't know everybody yet. That's part of the reason we wanted pizza today, and I know it's early for pizza, so you got to come back. But I encourage you to come back. I just want to talk with you a little bit. If you don't come back, I'm just going to take it personally, so there's that. But no, for real, it's so good to be here, guys, and it's so good to get to know all of you and hear your stories, and we look forward to knowing you better. But I just want to thank you for being welcoming. It just shows who you guys are, so thank you so much for doing that with our family. Like Nate said, that we're in this series called You Matter, and I've hoped you've enjoyed it. It's this idea that we're looking at, like, what do we want to be known for in a world that tells you what they're against, who they cheer against, and what they can't stand. We're going to say, this is what we stand for, and we just did it with one little phrase, You Matter. And what we said, when people look at us, when they think of us, we want them to say, hey, that's a church that treats me like I matter because God says I matter, that my value, my worth, that my dignity comes from God who loves me. We want everybody to know that. And so we're in week three. It's kind of been like a building blocks kind of type of series, like they're building off of each other. So the first week we talked about this is why you matter. You matter because God sent His only Son to die for you, and that you means you, everybody, right? It's you. Last week we looked at this idea that we all have these things in our life, and these things, it could be anything that's holding us back. And we looked at a tough question. Do you want to get well? Are you ready to change? And then this week, it's one of those conversations. It's a conversation that we have that can change the direction of your life. It can be a powerful moment. And here's what's going to be unique. Some of you have stepped into this moment, and you're going to say, well, this isn't for me. And that's where you're going to miss it. This is for you. And maybe today, maybe you've already taken this step, but you need to hear this so you can present this to someone else. Part of You Matter and will change next week is this idea that, yes, we matter, but other people also matter. So today, we're going to look at that. And I want to start off by telling you the power of a moment. Recently, I was reminded of this, that in a single moment, there's often power. I was reading this book, Green Lights, by Matthew McConaughey, you know, the guy that goes, all right, all right, all right, that guy. One of my favorite actors. And I can't lie, I did not read it. I audibled it on like 2 times the speed. But it still counts. I count that as a book read. But he was telling, it's his autobiography, and I'm going to warn you, if you're going to read this, it's funny, it's wild, it's crazy, but it's a little PG-13, it's a little crazy. But he was talking about his life and all these moments that had led him to being this guy. I actually told Nate this week, when we take our staff picture, I want my staff picture to look like this, right? It's a pretty good looking picture. But he talked about these moments, and he called them green light moments. And I love that. A green light moment is this moment that stands in front of you, that's in front of you. It's like a door opening, and you have an opportunity to step into this moment and embrace this moment. And often when you do, you can look back at the course of your life and see these are the moments that changed your life. And as in the book that he talks about, these moments, and it led him to being from nobody to becoming this actor that basically everybody knows. And we've all had these green light moments. I'm going to tell you a little bit of mine. Yesterday, I actually had a green light moment. I wasn't going to share this, but I took my parents are visiting, so I brought my mom and my brother over to church. And you know how we have those little goofy-looking, like, circle chairs out in the children's area? I was trying to get my mom to sit in one of those, because personally, I wanted to see her fall. But I got in one of those, and she's like, I'm not getting in. And I sat down. I'm like, Mom, there's no way for this actually to flip, right? And what you know what happens next, right? I sit down, and I'm trying to twirl, and I flip back on my back. And God's like, that's a green light moment, buddy. You are older than you think. You need to stop telling your mama to fall out of that chair, right? That's a green light moment. But then I think back to other green light moments that are more important. I think about the first time I was sitting in a church similar to this. I heard a young guy, for the first time talk about a guy named Jesus. A green light moment that led me to this moment. I had an opportunity to step through that door. In college, when I was done messing around and I was ready to get serious and ready to find someone who was wifey material and I was becoming husband material, I went and I started looking for someone to date. And after being very reluctant and telling me no many times, I'm very persistent, right? Whitney finally said yes to a date. We dated. We went on a couple dates. She could not resist it, right? She's like, hey, I want to be with this guy. Eventually, we started getting to know each other more. And then I, green light moment, had an opportunity to ask her to marry me. And to everybody's surprise, even my family's surprise, she said yes. God put that green light moment in front of me. We were able to step into that, and almost 9 years later, here we are, right? I think back to our marriage, and when we wanted to have a baby for so long, and it's like, you know, God kept giving us a red light, like, not yet, not yet, not yet, and years of trying, years and years of no, red light, red light, red light, red light. Eventually, God gave us a green light, and we were able to step into that moment. After 8.5 years of doing ministry in one place and making one place your home, and things come happen, and God opens the door for you to step into something new, and He opens this opportunity to come to this church, green light moment. We can all look back at our lives and see that these moments, there's these green light moments as you tell your story that you've stepped into or haven't stepped into. But you stepped into the green light moments, and you can look back in your story and say, in this moment, in the power of one moment, I saw my life change. What's interesting about the gospel, what's interesting about following Jesus, is that Jesus was someone who offered green light moments over and over and over again. That if you were to sit down, if you were at home or you're with a Bible or your phone, and you were to flip through Matthew or slide through Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the four gospels, and you started just to read about Jesus, you're going to see something. You're going to see that the gospel, despite what anybody says, the gospel is extraordinarily relational. It's not just a list of rules. It's not just a list of thou shalt do's and thou shalt not's. If you look at the way Jesus lived, you're going to see it's extremely relational. You're going to read of an encounter with Jesus had with a short man named Zacchaeus. You know the song, Zacchaeus was a wee little man. You know that song? He comes to this guy, and he's in a tree. He says, hey, I'm coming to your house today, right? Relational. You're going to read of a story of a woman caught in adultery. And Jesus says, hey, I'm not here to judge you. I don't condemn you. Now go sin no more. You're going to see that he tells a parable, a short story about finding a lost sheep. You're going to see that he says, I came to seek and save the lost. You're going to over and over again see that Jesus was extraordinarily relational. And the gospel is all about Jesus. But you're also going to see that Jesus offered these green light moments. And today, as we continue this series in week 3, I want to take you to a green light moment. A moment maybe you've accepted, a moment you have maybe stepped into before, but maybe it's also a moment you need to step into or a moment you need to tell others about. So let me kind of set the scene. It's all going to start with one little word, follow. That's the green light, right? So that's the green light. So let me set the scene. Jesus comes onto the scene, and he's going to start his public ministry. It's going to last about 3.5 years. And he has to pick a group of guys to go with him and be his crew, his disciples as we know him. And I want you to think, if you could pick anybody to be with you, who are you going to pick? You're going to pick someone who's probably smart, talented, maybe good looking, maybe has some resources to add to the group. You're going to pick some good people, right? Well, that's not what Jesus does. Well, he picks good people, but he picks the most unlikely type of people. He picks a fisherman. He picks Judas, who would ultimately go on to betray him. But he also picks this man that we're about to look at today. And we pick up in Matthew 9, verse 9. It says, and Jesus went from there, and he saw a man named, finish that line for me, Matthew. Matthew was sitting at a tax collector's booth. So right away, we learn something. We learn two things. There's a man named Matthew, and there's a man, and he was a tax collector. Now, he's a little shady, and he's not shady because his name is Matthew. Are there any Matthews in the building today? And we got Matt Profagel. All right, Matthews typically are a little shady by nature. No, I'm just kidding, right? But that's not what made him shady. He was shady because of his job. He was a tax collector. And just like today, no one likes to pay taxes, right? We don't like taxes. Well, tax collectors back then, they were often Jewish, and they were hired by the Romans. And the Romans would hire these Jewish people to go tax their other people. And the Romans, man, I'm pretty sure we just took some of the rule book, because they taxed everything. They got a sheep tax, a goat tax, food tax, every type of tax. And they would hire people like Matthew, and he would go collect the taxes. But often they were corrupt. So if you owed them like $10, Matthew would say, hey, you owe them $15. I'm going to take five for myself and 10 to the Romans. So everybody hated tax collectors. Nobody wanted to hang out with tax collectors. Nobody. Ever, ever, right? Nobody would hang out with tax collectors. And so Jesus walks into this town, and he sees Matthew sitting at this booth, and he's walking towards him. Imagine him sitting there. He's walking towards him. And people are thinking, okay, what is he going to say to him? He could say anything. I bet he could say, hey, Matthew, I bet your mama's real proud of you. That when she was holding you, rocking in her arms when you were a little baby, that she said, one day I hope my son grows up to be a despised tax collector. He could have said that. He could have said, hey, Matthew, you see my boy Peter over here? And Peter's a buff-looking dude in my mind. Fisherman, works with his hands. He's like, see that guy up here? In a few minutes, when you leave this booth, Peter's going to meet you out back, right? He could have said that. He could have judged him. He could have condemned him. And you know what? Everybody would have thought that was okay. But that's not how Jesus acts. Here's what Jesus says. It says, as Jesus went from there, he saw him, and he went from there, he saw him back to the tax collector, and he told him this, follow me. Follow me. Green light moment, he told him, and Matthew got up and followed him. What did Jesus say to this man the first opportunity he spoke to him? What did he say? He said, what? Follow me. I imagine these words are the words, this green light moment presented in front of Matthew that changed his entire life. You know what Jesus does throughout the entire gospel? He gives an invitation to all types of people to follow him. Rich people, poor people, people who have it all together and look good, people who don't have it all together and don't look good. Today he does the same thing. People who come in here have a strong faith, people who come in here and it's just a battle to get here, but you're here today and you won that battle. He calls you to follow him. All type of people imaginable, Jesus says, follow me. I say it this way, no matter who you are, what you've been through, or what you've done, Jesus says, follow me. Everybody say, follow me. Follow me. All right, so no matter who you are, you matter, right? So no matter who you are, what you've been through, or what you've done, Jesus says, follow me. And so he says, Matthew, I know you're a tax collector, I know you're despised, follow me. Now what we don't read, which I wish we could have read, I want to know what Peter and the rest of the disciples are actually thinking in this moment. Because they're not happy. They're like, Jesus, you called us to follow you. You said you're going to offer us something better, and you want that dude to hang out with us? It's like if you're watching the NFL draft and they picked a dude that nobody picked, you're like, you're picking that dude? Like, I can run faster than him, which you can't, but you think you can, right? Like, I could run faster than him. You're picking this dude? Jesus, you said we're going to, like, be this awesome disciple group. Like, and you pick Matthew? It's like when your mom tells you to hang out with the kid down the street who's a little weird, and, like, he eats bugs, and he might even eat his boogers, and he's, like, strange, and, like, you're like, Mom, I can't follow him. It's going to mess up my street cred. And you're like in fourth grade, but you're like, my street cred's going to be messed up. But Peter's like, follow him? Jesus is like, Peter, be quiet, man. You're just a fisherman. Just be quiet. Matthew, don't listen to Peter. Just follow me. Follow me. Matthew. Hey, right here, Matthew. Stop what you're doing and follow me. Follow me, Matthew. And now Matthew hears that, Peter hears that. He's like, oh, come on, Jesus. Well, there's other group of people. There's religious people, and they also hear that. But there's a tension in all this going on because Matthew's sitting at his tax collector's booth. Jesus walks up to him and says, follow me. And then they're thinking, wait. Doesn't he have to do something first? Like, doesn't he have to look a certain way? Doesn't he have to, like, at least change from his tax collector outfit? Like, doesn't he have to repent? Doesn't he have to change something? You can't just walk up to him, Jesus, say, follow me, and everything's okay. It's like, it can't be that simple. Can it? Can it be that simple? Can it be that simple that Jesus comes into your life and meets you where you're at and just says, follow me? It can't be that simple, can it? Kind of reminds me of when I was trying to get into college. So parents, if you have kids in here, clog their ears for a second. I lived by a motto in college and in high school. It was this motto: C's get degrees. C's get degrees. I get the same diploma at the end of the year that A people did, but if I got C's, I still get the diploma, right? Well, what I didn't know, which I should have known, is colleges don't get like C's. So I tried to, I wanted to go to college, and I went to the guidance counselor, and she's like, hey, sorry to break it to you. No college is going to accept you except community college. Well, I didn't want to go to Kankakee Community College. I wanted to go to a big college, right? I knew Purdue was out of the question. I mean, nobody would take me until I heard about a place called Lincoln Christian University. And I was given a promise. If I applied to Lincoln Christian University, that I would get accepted. You know what I did? I filled out the essay, wrote a story, and they probably thought, like, we shouldn't accept this guy, but we're going to. And I got back the letter, and it said, accepted. Later find out that they accept basically anybody with a pulse. And I'm like, can it really be this simple to get into college? And it was that simple. Can it really be that simple that Jesus says, walks up to Matthew and says, hey, follow me? And the answer is, yeah, it's that simple. And can it really be that simple that you come in here today living one way, acting one way, and in a moment you hear the words, follow me, and Jesus is calling you to follow me, and in this moment you can follow him? Yeah, it could be that simple. And what I love about this is Matthew isn't just called to follow Jesus. He's not saying, hey, just come hang out with us for a day. He's like, no, listen, Matthew, here's what I'm calling you to. Come be with us. Come be part of the crew. Don't listen to Peter. Peter will come around. Come be in the crew. Come be one of my boys. I know the way you're living. I can see it in your eyes, Matthew. I know the way you're living. You know you want to change. You know you need something different. Follow me. Come be with me. And what he's actually saying is he's saying this: identify with me, and I'll identify with you. Matthew, if you're ready, and you can put your name here, right? Nathan, Tony, whatever your name is, Matthew, right? Identify with me, and I'll identify with you. Wherever you're at, hey, I'll identify with you. Will you follow me? And I think this is one of these spots where it's not what Jesus does say, because we don't get a full glimpse in the whole conversation, most likely. It's not what he does say, it's what he doesn't say that I think is really important. You know what he doesn't say? He doesn't say, hey, Matthew, I'm going to come back in 3 weeks. In 3 weeks, if I come back here and you're still looking the same way, you're out. He doesn't say, hey, Matthew, once you get this together, follow me. He doesn't tell you, hey, stop being so lustful, stop being such a jerk, stop posting that, stop acting like that, stop doing this, stop doing that, stop doing this, fill in the blank with whatever it is, and you can follow me. That's not what he says. He says, Matthew, where you're at right now, he's like, we'll get to the other stuff later, but where you're at right now in this moment, this green light that's in front of you, follow me. And Jesus says the same thing to us, that wherever you're at, wherever's going on, wherever you're at, follow me. Whatever's going on in your life, follow me. And here's what Jesus knew. You know, we got this little mission statement over here, helping people find Jesus and live like him. Jesus knew if he could just get Matthew to step up and follow him and live with him and be part of the disciples, you know what would happen along the way? Matthew would start to look like Jesus. Matthew would start to act like Jesus, because you don't stand in the presence of Jesus and stay the same. He knew that. But he's like, before we get to any of that, right where you're at right now, stand up, Matthew. Get out of your tax collector booth. Stand up and follow me. And I think that's a pivotal moment for us. I think that's something we need to talk about for just a second. As we're living out this culture, this is going to be so important. When people are looking for a place to belong, or people are looking for a place to feel loved, or people are looking for a place to feel valued, we have to understand that's even how Jesus operated. You can belong before you believe. What do I mean by that? There's no way Matthew believed exactly who Jesus was. How do I know that? Read the rest of the Gospels. They missed it after 3 years of being with him. But Jesus is saying, I don't need you to believe anything in this very moment except that I can offer you a better life. Just get up, Matthew, and follow me. When we come in this room, it's what I love about Revolution that drew me here, is that on a Sunday morning, we are so diverse. You're going to have people in this church who have been a Christian follower of Jesus for a long time, and they know their stuff. They can quote the Bible verses. And then on the same Sunday, you're going to have someone coming in for the first time who knows nothing. For some of us, we're going to have in our bank accounts a lot more zeros. In others of us, not so much. Some of us are going to have a different past. Some of us are going to look differently. But what we want to do is make sure of is that we're a church. When people come here for the first time looking to take their next step or looking for something new, that we say, hey, you matter before you change anything. Now, we said last week, you matter so much to us, we don't want you to stay there. Not because we want you to follow a list of rules, but because we want you to step into the life that Christ has for you, that Jesus has for you. But you can belong before you believe. And we need to be a church that says, hey, listen, I don't know what you've been through. I don't know what's been going on. But in this moment, in this place, when you walk through these doors, those good-looking double doors right there, you belong here. And you can belong before you believe. Now, we're confident enough that if you belong long enough, if you're around us long enough, that you're going to start to live like Jesus, because we're going to live out Jesus in the way we act, the way we worship. But just step up and follow us today. So that's what Matthew hears. And here's what Matthew does. It says Matthew got up and he followed him. While Jesus was having dinner at Matthew's house, how many other tax collectors? Many. Everybody say many. Many tax collectors and sinners came and ate with him and his disciples. So we started at Matthew's booth. Now we're at his house. And to Peter's surprise, it's not just Matthew the tax collector. It's all the other tax collectors around and sinners. So now Jesus isn't just eating with Matthew. He's eating with all these people that everybody would have looked at and said, hey, no rabbi, no teacher, no man of dignity would have been with at all. And Jesus is right in the middle. He's like, yes, man, we're going to be eating this food, right? I don't know what they eat. They're going to be eating sheep, right? They're like, we're in the middle. We're partying up. We're hanging out together. He says, I'm identifying with these people. And then there's another group of people there. There's some religious people. And the religious people, this is eating them up. The Pharisees, they can't stand this. You see, the Pharisees, that's also a good word for them, is separatists. They would separate themselves, often because they would think the law required them to do this, but they would separate from anyone who was different than them. They wanted nothing to do with them. And so then we have Jesus, who is a teacher in his own right, and he's eating with these tax collectors, and he's eating with these sinners. And I think that's a beautiful picture of what we should be. A church of different stories, of different backgrounds, of people of different levels of belief, and we're coming together, and though the world would say we should be not united, that we're united around one common person, Jesus. So all these people are united around Jesus, and it's eating up the Pharisees. They can't stand it. But again, I think we have to stop and say this. As we look at what Jesus is doing, as we think of a church that's trying to live out Jesus' mission, There's a phrase that we should think of, and it's this, that is what's true of Jesus should be true of you. And if Jesus, who we're trying to live like, ate with people who are nothing like him, then we should probably eat with people who are nothing like us. If Jesus would welcome people who voted differently than him, we probably should welcome people who vote differently than us. If Jesus would eat with people who the world said had nothing in common with him, we should probably eat with people who have nothing in common with us. What's true of Jesus should be true of you. But there he is. There's some tension growing in the room because he's eating with these tax collectors, these Pharisees, these outsiders. And so some of the religious people, they start to chime up, and here's what they say. Well, they're complaining, and they're like, hey, why does your teacher eat with them? And Jesus hears them complaining, and this is what he says in verse 12. It's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. He's like, you want to know why I'm doing this? Let me tell you. I didn't come to this world to save those. I didn't come to save those, even though we came to save everybody. I didn't come to save those who didn't think they need saved. I didn't come for those who think that they can work their way in. I came to this world because people matter, and I came for those who are sick. And Matthew hears it, he's like, I'm sick? And Jesus is like, yeah, Matthew, you're sick. You know what I mean. You're doing things that are causing you to live a way you don't want to live. I come for people who are lost, people who are hurting, people who know there's a better way out there, people who need saved. That's who I've come from. So yeah, I don't need Matthew to do anything in this moment. I don't need these tax collectors and these sinners to do anything in this moment. I just need to eat here with them. And in this moment, as I eat with them and they spend time with me, I will offer them a new way. But in this moment right now, just let us eat. So Jesus said, I'm calling them to follow me. And you know what he's calling us to? I love how the Message Bible paraphrases it. This is what it says. Imagine this, as we're reading this, imagine that he's speaking to you. I imagine Matthew hearing these words, but imagine he's speaking to you. Are you tired? Anybody tired in here? Raise your hand. Anybody tired, right? I'm tired, right? I got an 11-month-old who doesn't want to sleep. I'm tired, right? Are you worn out? Are you burned out on religion? Are you burned out on going to Facebook and seeing Christians fight with each other and getting in all these areas and acting ways that Jesus doesn't act? Like, are you tired of that? Jesus said, are you tired of things? Jesus says, come to me. Follow me. Get away with me. Follow me. And you'll recover your life. And as you're doing that, guess what? I'll show you how to take real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. He's like, follow me and live like me. You'll start doing what I do. You'll start living like me. Right? Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. That's what Jesus is calling us to. He's like, I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. That's what he's calling you to. So let's just compare this. Jesus is saying, like, listen, guys, like, these are the Pharisees. And what do the Pharisees say? The Pharisees, the religious people, they say this: change, and you can join us. Look a certain way, act a certain way, smile, like, right? Look a certain way, and you can join us. Jesus says, listen, follow me, you'll change. Follow me long enough, believe in me, do what I tell you to do, live this out, you'll change. But you don't have to do anything in this moment. Just right now, follow me. And Jesus is like, listen, that's who I've come for, and that's what I've come to do. He's like, your way is this. Take a quiz, look a certain way, act a certain way, and you can be part of our group. He's like, I'm not about that. So right in this moment, let us be. I'm calling Matthew today, just today, listen, today to follow me. We'll get to the next steps later, but right now, I'm just calling him to follow me. And that's what he's calling you to do. And that's what maybe someone in your life needs to hear. They don't need to hear all these other things that you need to get to down the road, but in the moment right now, to make that first step, all they need to hear is that Jesus says you matter right now. We'll get to the second part. Trust me, we'll get to the second part. But right now, I don't need you to do anything except get up and follow me. You know, and as you take this journey of following him, I tell people all this, it's messy. Anybody's life sometimes, like, just raise your hand, anybody's life gets a little messy at times, right? Mine does, right? Yeah, like, hey, it's really messy. I use this illustration, I tell people, I was just having this conversation a couple months ago. 8 years ago, Whitney and I moved, as we got married, and then we moved, and I had the privilege of packing the packing truck in my parents' house. Well, I waited till the last moment, the very last moment, because that's how you do it. And that last day before, I had to move everything up out of my parents' house, to go to drive to her parents' house, pack it up, and move to Indiana. It was a blizzard. So there's me and my cousin Cody, who, I love you, Cody, but you can't lift anything, right? So, like, it was a struggle. And we had to move everything in this packing truck in the middle of a blizzard. So we're doing this as blizzard out, and like we're slipping and sliding on that ramp because it's so cold, it's windy, right? And we're trying to carry couches and tables up here. And we get to the truck, we put everything in there. We know nothing about moving, by the way, so we just put it in there. We get in the truck, we drive down to Whitney's parents' house. He's following me along. He's following behind me in the truck, in my car. He slides out, goes in the ditch. Basically, he can't lift or drive. Like, I need a better moving partner. So it's just like, we get to Whitney's house, barely can get up the driveway. We open the back of the door. And I kid you not, I feel like I could have hired 3 random people off the street just to throw stuff in there, and it would look better than the stuff we packed in that truck. It was everywhere. It looked like I literally threw a grenade in the back of the truck and everything exploded. And it's sometimes when you're following Jesus still, your life will look like that. People will look at you and be like, I thought you were a follower of Jesus, but your life's a mess. And you're like, the reason I follow Jesus is because my life's a mess, man. It gets so messy. I just wanted to say this. Don't let your red lights, the mess and the chaos stop you from stepping into the green lights that Jesus has for you. Because Matthew could have said, like, Jesus, my life is such a mess. I don't have anything together yet. I can't follow you. And he could have missed the green light moment. So he says, follow me. And again, I know I've said it 1,000 times, but I want to make it clear. Follow me right now where you're at. He says, follow me. And that's what he says to us. But I would be doing a disservice if I don't just hit a little bit. And we'll get into this in the weeks and months to come. We got a lot of time to talk about this. But what he means when he says, follow me. So Jesus' culture is much different than us. They didn't have social media. They didn't have iPads. They didn't have phones, right? So when we think of follow today, we're like thinking TikTok, Instagram, Twitter. We're like, hey, I follow Dwayne The Rock, the Johnson. You know, I follow Justin Bieber, Ariana Grande, Matthew McConaughey. Like, and that's follow, right? Well, this time in the world, follow had a different meaning. It was one little word that when you say you follow someone, you were a disciple of someone. And that's actually not a Christian word. A disciple was a common concept. There would be a rabbi. There'd be a teacher. And he would be famous or not so famous. Some were popular, some weren't. But people would say, hey, I want to learn under that rabbi. I want to follow that rabbi. And they would follow him, and they would live life with him, and they would get to know him and be in relationship with him. And that rabbi would become part of their life. So when Jesus is saying, follow me, he's ultimately saying, as you follow me, I'm calling you to be, everybody say it, a disciple. I'm calling you to be a disciple, but it's an invitation. The invitation to follow is an invitation to a relationship. It's not just simply go where I go. It's to do what I've done, live how I've lived. And so when he's saying, follow me, it's like the first step is just following, but eventually you got to become a disciple. And a disciple in this relationship is, here's what we'll do. We'll be with Jesus. We'll know Jesus. We'll imitate Jesus, and we'll do what Jesus did. So we'll be with Jesus, we'll imitate Jesus, and we'll do what Jesus did. We'll be with Jesus, we'll imitate with Jesus, and we'll do what Jesus did. You see, there's a process. You'll be with Jesus. You'll follow him. You'll start to imitate him, right? And imitation isn't always actually you wanting to do it. You're just like, I'm imitating because this is the person I like or I want to be like, so I'm kind of doing what they're doing. So there's a step, right? And then eventually you'll do what Jesus did. But you'll never do what Jesus did if you didn't be with Jesus. You'll never do what Jesus did if you didn't start following Jesus. And right now in this room, all of us fall under one area, right? We first step, maybe we need to be with Jesus. Maybe right now some of us are, and we're trying to just imitate and do what Jesus, you know, kind of look like Jesus, and the rest of us are doing what Jesus did. Be with Jesus, imitate Jesus, and do what Jesus did. Now, what I love about our mission statement, helping people find Jesus and live like him. Right now in this series, we want to help people find Jesus. We want to help people be with Jesus. But we also want to live in this tension that as we're following Jesus and helping people find Jesus, we want people to live like Jesus. And some of us want to get everybody to live like Jesus right now, but we got to first start at the follow. And that's why Jesus said, follow me. And even as Peter and the other disciples followed Jesus, they still messed up. They still had red light moments. But Jesus is like, I don't need anything from you today. Just wherever you're at, whatever's going on, follow me. And in a diverse room like this, diverse church, for each of us, there's a different next step. For some of us, the first step is to follow. For some of us, the first step was getting here today. And you know what? We celebrate that, and we welcome you. We want nothing else from you right now, but we would love to talk. For some of you, you're like, hey, I've been following Jesus for a long time. Well, now are you doing what Jesus did? Those are the next steps. But today, right now, we don't expect anything. We just expect you to step into this green light moment and let it change your life. Matthew went from being a tax collector one day to a disciple of Jesus that we're talking about 2,000 years later because he stepped into his green light moment. And today, to end this conversation, I want to end with an illustration, a story of a good friend named Rich Baker. I want you to draw your attention to the screen.
I was actually raised Catholic. I'm the youngest of a family of 5 kids. Mom and dad were in love and together till the day they died. We were raised in Catholic schools, so we've known Christ from the day we were born. You know, I've been in church from the time I was a baby. So basically, I grew up in an ideal home. There was plenty of love. There was absolutely no kind of abuse. I wouldn't say that we had everything that we wanted, but we definitely had everything that we needed. And we had plenty of love, guidance. We were taught good morals. So on paper, I should be a success story. I should have stayed in church and, you know, and just never gotten any kind of trouble. But that just wasn't the case, actually. So I got out of high school. Just really didn't have no direction. I didn't know where I wanted to go. I was kind of lost. I wanted to play football, and that fizzled out. I went down. I ended up in Miami, Florida, and I think that's kind of where things got a little out of control. I was fresh out of high school. I discovered cocaine down there, which would absolutely eventually be my downfall. The addictive properties of it was just over the top. You basically, once you start doing it, you can't get enough of it. There's never enough. Then you just want more and more and more, and you know, whether you run out of money or not, then you're trying to figure out ways to get it. That's kind of where my life went, and went from basically one drug to another, or all of them, whatever anybody had. I mean, it was pretty much what's your drug of choice. I don't know, what do you got? I mean, that's a sad reality, but that's pretty much how it was, you know. I mean, there was really no big traumatic moment that caused me to do drugs. I just chose to do them. I didn't choose to be an addict. That wasn't a choice I made, and that's something that I think that addicts have no control over. You start out as a fun thing, or doing drugs with friends, partying or whatever, and at some point it takes over. Then it's no longer something that you want, it's something you need. And that's how it got with cocaine for me. My cocaine habit was so bad that every morning, if I went to sleep, every morning when I woke up, my objective for that day, before anything else, was to get high. No matter what I had to do that. And I'm lying to people to borrow money, borrowing money I never intended to pay back. I can remember pawning my dad's big snowblower, and then it was all about, you know, lying and cheating and stealing and just doing stuff that just was not my character, just not like me, just to get that buzz. And that's a horrible feeling, just an uncontrollable feeling. You know, you have this urge to go do something that you really can't stop. I don't know how else to describe it. It was horrible. I just knew. I knew I needed help. I knew I needed God. You know, I knew He was been there the whole time, just right there waiting on me, just waiting on me to say, "Come," you know, just knock on the door and He'll let you in. You know, it was all right there, and I just never reached out. And I knew at that moment that's the only thing that was going to save my life. That was the only thing that was going to change the direction that my life was going, which is obviously prisons and jails and death and, you know, disease and whatever. It was definitely heading for death. I had tears in my eyes, and I just wanted God to change things for me. I just wanted Him to take control. I think God reached down and had me arrested. It wasn't an arrest, it was an rescue. And I cried. And I asked God to come into my life, take my heart, take my will, take my life, and just save me. Show me the way. I'll do the work. I pledge myself to You at this very moment. Just please save me. And from that moment forward, I've dedicated my life to Christ. When I allowed Jesus to come into my heart, and because I know that I've been fighting this fight. You know what? He already won it. Jesus already won this fight. There is no battle. He already did it. He did it on the cross for all of us. You know, He died on the cross for us. And it's just that easy. He did, he, He did the ultimate sacrifice so I could be free. He come and met me right where I was at, right in the pit of despair, the worst, lowest time of my life, and he loved me. Get Jesus in your heart and in your life and try to live more like him, because I can tell you what he's done. He's restored my relationships with my kids. He's restored my life, everything. I owe everything to just bringing Jesus into my life. So, hi, I'm Rich Baker, and I'm part of the Revolution family, where we think you matter because God thinks you matter.